The trajectories had a sort of arbitrary parametrization. So we had the natural, which was a parametrization invariant, thanks to adding the sort of one-dimensional metric. And then gauge fixing a parametrization invariant gave us an action like this, and then the propagator. So tau was essentially the gauge invariant content inside this one-dimensional metric. So I'd like to mimic this for a fermion. So our starting point is going to be the free fermion propagator. And doing it massless, it's straightforward to add a mass, but it changes the story a little bit. So let me just leave it at this, like this. So how do we get a propagator like this from quantum mechanics? The zeroth order question is, how do we get gamma matrices from quantum mechanics? That's actually very easy to answer. Suppose that I have a fermion, a bunch of fermions, one-dimensional fermions, which carry a space-time index. Then when you quantize them, you get anti-commutator relations, which roughly look like this, which means that essentially they become gamma matrices. So if you take a set of fermions in a vector representation of SOD, then the ground state, the Hilbert space for these one-dimensional fermions will be a spinor. And the fermions will act on it as gamma matrices. So if you want to, the way you can get this from quantum mechanics is that if you have a quantum mechanics which has both bosonic coordinates with their conjugate momenta, and fermionic coordinates. So the way we produce this would essentially be as a P mu psi mu. Now, for now, we can rewrite it in an exponential form by adding some auxiliary variables. Okay. For zeta is a fermionic variable, and tau is the usual proper time. Okay. So our objective is to rewrite this in terms of a path integral over these bosonic coordinates. I'm sorry. These fermionic coordinates. And possibly to have this, to identify this with a gauge fixed version of a path integral with an Hager symmetry, which are a parametrization invariant. So we're going to have both an integral over the matrix and an integral over some partner or some fermionic version of the matrix. This should be supposed to be a chi, not to be confused with an x. Okay. So here we divided by diffeomorphisms. Here we'll learn how to divide by something called super diffeomorphisms. So the final picture is that in order to get a fermion in space-time, we're going to consider maps from a sort of super line to space time. So a line which is parametrized both by a proper time and by a fermionic version of the proper time. Let me move here. Now, I feel sorry. There. To understand a little bit better how this fermionic time will work, let's look at these two terms. Okay. So when we Fourier transform back to position space, and maybe choose some polarizations for this spinner, we're going to sandwich this object between some states. So it will get some propagator in some quantum mechanics. Now, I'm going to identify these two as operators in this quantum mechanics. So we have an Hamiltonian, B squared, and what's called a supercharge. And this has the property that Q squared is H. Don't confuse this with the BRST charge. I'm sorry for the unfortunate identity between the symbols I've been using. This definitely does not square to zero. Okay. So this, if you want, this is a unexpected symmetry of this quantum mechanics that we're building. This quantum mechanics is a Hamiltonian, and then it has this operator which commutes with a Hamiltonian and satisfies an interesting algebra. And the sort of green function we are studying looks like e to the minus tau h minus zeta q. So in the sense, we are somehow propagating this particle, this quantum mechanics, for a time tau with the Hamiltonian, and then for this fermionic time zeta with this super symmetric transformation. More precisely, if I call this G, sort of the propagator, this satisfies something like dt G plus H G equals 0, and the zeta minus zeta dt G plus QG equal to 0. And here I really meant, sorry, commutator. Oh, no, sorry, not commutator at all. See, you might have thought that when I act with the zeta derivative on G, I just pull down Q. This is not quite precise because Q does not square to zero. It does not commute it itself. So to really do this calculation, you should expand G. Okay. This is what G really is. Okay, this is just a fancy way to write it. If I do a zeta derivative on G, I get Q e to the minus tau H. But I'm missing the q squared zeta e to the minus tau h. Q squared is h, so a way to get the zeta q squared is by doing zeta d over the tau. So So the only reason this calculation is because these two objects are useful. So this sort of introduces the funny geometry on superspace, which is something that you will encounter every time you study supersymmetry. So there are vector fields with defined translations, and then somewhat peculiar vector fields with defined super translations. If you square this guy, you get the time derivative. The time derivative. Sorry, it was still to be tau. So the theory of this excess and size is your first example of supersymmetric theory. Now, usually you encounter them in more than one dimension, but it already has a lot of the features. So this is a supersymmetric quantum mechanics. Now, I would like to promote now these translations, these super translations. I would like to promote these translations to diffeomorphisms, and then similarly to promote this supersymmetric version of translations to super diffeomorphisms. So now I'm going to use local coordinates on my word line, u, which is the time, and theta. So in order to introduce the notion of super diffeomorphism, it's useful to introduce the notion of superderivative. The superderivative is similar to the generator of supertranslations, but it has an opposite sign in the definition. It has the property that d theta squared is du. So a diffeomorphism, essentially, so it's a transformation of the coordinate u, which in particular is the property that the derivative transforms as a Jacobian. But it's just multiplied by a Jacobian. So I define a super diffeomorphism as a transformation of u and theta, with the property that the superderivative transforms by a Jacobian, instead of mixing up with other things. So okay, this does not stay down, does it? So let me define the vector field corresponding to a super diffeomorphism as the following. Just I take a function of u times this. Okay. So we find that with this definition is indeed true that if I act on the superderivative, it ends up multiplying it by Jacobian. Now, what happens if I do the anticommutator of two of these super vector fields? It's a somewhat tedious calculation. You get terms where the derivative of theta acts on theta, And tensor are the derivatives, but a few acts on the epsilon for the other vector field. And after the dust settles, it looks like this. So we discovered the definition of a standard diffeomorphism. So it's a really bad notations, are they? Maybe I should call just this a delta, to indicate that it's a transformation with parameter epsilon. Okay. And then define the transformation with the whose parameter is a vector field. Which is going to be V du plus 1/2 duv theta. So with this definition, I can write this as minus delta of 2 epsilon prime. So I find a nice algebra transformation. That true with anticommutator of true transformations gives me bosonic diffeomorphism. You can also check that this guy commutes this guy to give you fermionic diffeomorphism, and that true of these guys commute to bosonic transformation. But a way to understand, as usual, the best way to understand why do I have a symmetry is to think about what is this symmetry of. And these are the symmetries of this super, that leave this super derivative invariant and up to rescalings. Okay. See, in terms of coordinates, what this transformation is doing is it shifts theta by epsilon of u, and it shifts u by theta epsilon, while this shifts u by v of u, and theta by theta du, dv. So in order to use these transformations to find transformations of fields, it's useful to introduce the notion of superfield. A superfield is just a field which is a function of both time and supertime. So if you think about going from a sort of a Schrödinger picture to a Hasemer picture, where fields get time dependent by getting conjugated with the Hamiltonian, then a superfield is something you get by conjugating with the Hamiltonian and the supercharge. So let me introduce some field y mu as a function of both u and theta. Which is x. And then I expand it in this theta coordinate. Because theta squared is 0, I get, because theta is boson, is fermionic, I get something like x plus theta psi. So the sort of superfield contains the fields we want to have in our quantum mechanics. So that by acting on the vector fields on the superfield, I get, you find the transformations of the fields. So for example, the variation respect of epsilon of x is epsilon times psi in the variation respect of epsilon of psi is minus epsilon times the time derivative of x. Okay, so every time you do supersymmetry, you'll encounter things like this. You'll find configurations. We have some bosonic fields and some fermionic fields, say a scalar and a fermion, and the transformation which maps the scalar to the fermion, and the fermion to the derivative of the scalar. Okay, any questions? So next, I would like to write an action for these x's and psi's, which is invariant under super diffeomorphisms. Now, in principle, this is something I could do using superspace, meaning I could write an action as a function of y using some superderivatives, integrals over, u and theta, and so on. This is doable, but because I'm gonna put something that looks like a graviton, like a metric, and doing so, I'll do essentially what's this one-dimensional supergravity. And supergravity is never easy to do. In principle, it can be done using superspace, but it's really an art, and which I'm not skilled in. So I prefer to just work in with these components, ignore the beauty of supergeometry, and just write down an action which is invariant under those transformations. So I use this supergeometry to get the transformations, but then I'll complete the program by hand. And that's more or less how supergravity works. People find some beautiful transformation with some idea of supergeometry, and then sit down and write down an action and check term by term that they can cancel, let's say, the supersymmetry transformations. Now, so let's start with something which we definitely want in the action. So the action for the x coordinates, we know we want it to be something like E inverse x dot squared. Okay. I've not decided how E transforms yet, but I'll use that freedom to make things work later. So if I do a transformation of the act of the, this really means Lagrangian, sorry. So if I make a transformation of x, s of x, I get something like this. Here with x dot, I really meant the ux. Okay. Dots indicate derivative respect of this time. And then I need to include the transformation of E, which I haven't decided yet. Now, how do I cancel this? Well, I can start with something like this. Is the standard action for a fermion up to the. So if I do the variation, So here integrated by parts after doing the variation of psi of psi dot, this will give me the derivative of inverse. And you can see that some terms are starting to cancel out. For example, this term is going to cancel against this term. But I've generated a lot more terms. So this looks pretty bad. So then I'm going to add an extra action, term to the action, which introduces a new field, which is a partner of E. The variation will involve, of course, the variation of this new field. Okay. So let's look at this for a bit.
What's that?
Where is f? It was supposed to be epsilon, sorry. Okay, so it turns out that we can make everything cancel out if we define the variation of chi I did it last year. I think it works up to science. By the way, yeah, I think last year lecture was probably better than today's lecture is gonna be, because the calculation was a bit fresher in my mind. You're free to look at it on Pearson. So this is something that, unfortunately, is always happening when you do supersymmetry, especially super gravity. At some point, you need to sit down and check the variation of the actions, and it's tedious. Once you do it, you try to forget about it. So this is what I really was after. So this is how this is what's usually called the gravitino. The path superfermionic version of the metric. And you see that so the metric transforms into the gravitino. The gravitino transforms into the derivative of the metric plus a term which is the derivative of the diffeomorphism parameter. So this is really the crucial element. So the gravitino is something you introduce to compensate for the fact that your supersymmetric transformations are position dependent. And so these transformations involve crucially the derivative of the supersymmetric parameters with respect to the position. Much like the. Okay, so.
Mm-hmm. So is this the fundamental reason why it's between the superfactor particles?
Actually, no. So it's kind of funny. Here, we're studying the superparticle. We're studying a fermion. We're not studying a supersymmetric theory in space-time. We're just studying one fermion. We found that the natural way to describe a fermion is worldline formalism was for the worldline itself to become supersymmetric. In a similar way, when we define superstrings, superstring is born not as a supersymmetric theory in space-time. It's born just as a string theory with fermions, with space-time fermions. In order to produce space-time fermions, you do something like this, and you end up with some supersymmetry on the worksheet. And then, at the end of the calculation, as a bonus, you get supersymmetry in the space-time. Well, so here I want to interpret this as a gauge fixed integral over the metric. And I'm trying to build something analogous. So here I have this integral over tau and zeta. And I want to think about it as a gauge fixed integral over the metric and self-fermionic version of the metric. And I claim that the correct way to think about this fermionic version of the metric is to start by thinking about fermionic diffeomorphisms and then add this fermionic part. The same way as the metric is something we put in the action in order to make sure that it's diffeomorphism invariant. The supermetric, this cavitino, is something we put in the action to make sure it's invariant under super diffeomorphisms. Well, in this one-dimensional problem, not quite clear what can I say about its properties. But if you do similar calculations in more than one dimension, so you study something like supergravity, then the gravitino is a field of spin 3/2. Conversely, there are theorems that tell you that if you have a quantum field theory with a massless field of spin 3/2, then the theory should be a theory of supergravity. So there should be supersymmetry. And that's more or less why you end up with a theory of superstrings, as a theory that is supersymmetric in space-time, just because you do your calculation in this superstring theory, and out pops a gravitino. And the moment the gravitino pops out, a gravitino in the target space, in space-time, the moment the gravitino pops out in space-time, you know that your space-time theory was supersymmetric.
So now the worksheet fermion and boson will combine to make a space-time fermion?
It's a bit trickier than that. We'll see. So, see, already here you can see that things are a little bit trickier. I mean, here we produced just a fermion, right? But the fermions on the word line have nothing to do with the fact that what we produced is a fermion. I mean, the fermions on the word line gave me gamma matrices. Then the Hilbert space for these gamma matrices ends up being a fermion in space-time. So it's not that these psi's become the space-time fermions. Rather, when you quantize the psi's, you produce a space of states, which is a spinor in space-time, which has spinor indices. And that's the way it's going to happen in the superstring theory, too. When you quantize some modes of the worksheet fermions, you produce states which have spinor, space-time spinor indices.
This argument does not quite capture. So if I can look at the zero mode of the string, zero mode of the fermions and the bosons, then this argument should somehow imply that those zero modes are combining to form a space-time fermion.
It's not the zero mode that gives the space-time fermion. It's the Hilbert space upon which the zero mode. Okay, so now we go to our starting point. So we go to where, to the place where we wanted to start with. So we go to a place where we have an action involving positions, superpartners of the positions, one-dimensional metric, one-dimensional Gravitino, and an action which is invariant under super diffeomorphisms. And now we can start with this and H-fix it and go backwards all the way here. Well, I don't really care about doing it in detail because all I really wanted to was to write down this and then generalize it to two dimensions to the superstrings. But we can at least see the basic details of the gauge fixing. So we need to find some gauge invariant quantities. Okay. So clearly we have 1 degree of freedom in the bosonic degree of freedom in the metric, 1 fermionic degree of freedom in the Gravitino, and we should be able to kill them by using the 1 bosonic degree of freedom in the diffeomorphisms and the 1 fermionic degree of freedom in the super diffeomorphisms. But I would like to show that there are some gauge invariant zero modes left, which are tau and zeta. So if you look at the at the supersymmetry transformations here, you can ask what's the transformation of E squared chi. Okay. So you get E squared times this. I really hope that I didn't get it. Okay. Minus E square epsilon chi. You should be able to see that this is a total derivative. So I hope. Just a moment. Oh, no, sorry. So this came from the variation of chi. Then I want the variation of E squared, which is plus 2e cubed times the variation of this. I think. Okay, so I know I. Okay, so the point is that. So I want to sort of gauge fix by imposing this constraint. Okay. So this will. So yeah, sorry. So this here things work in a slightly different way from the particle. For the particle, we could just write down something which was the integral of E from 0 to 1, because the proper time was a gauge invariant quantity. So it was clear that I could gauge fix things, but not eliminate this gauge invariant quantity. Now, here is a little bit less. It's obvious, but it's true that if you do a gauge fixing, if you just do this gauge fixing, this action goes to this. But I'm sorry, I seem to be missing a point here. Yeah, I don't think I'll be able to fix it. It's not really something that I need for the superstring, so let me just ignore it. You can show that this can be gauge fixed back to the action. Ignore it, please. Let me just. I just want to use this, use the notion of super diffeomorphisms, and move to two dimensions. So it turns out that so it takes a considerable amount of work to write down a nice two-dimensional theory of supergravity. Write down super diffeomorphisms and super coordinate transformations and so on. It's tedious and not very instructive. But it turns out that at the end of the story, after you introduce your metric, your gravitino in two dimensions, your super diffeomorphisms and gauge fix, you get something that is very similar to that, but in terms of holomorphic coordinates. So in the bosonic case, the end of the gauge fixing story was that we ended up with a two-dimensional surface where locally we could put flat coordinates, a flat metric, and then we could map patch together these patches by holomorphic coordinate transformations, conformal transformations. So now I would like to just introduce the notion of super conformal transformation and super Riemann surface. So to do so, I'm just introducing local patches of coordinates so I'm going to build a surface by patching together local coordinates, which involve a bosonic and a fermionic coordinate. And the transformations I use to patch them together are going to be just the holomorphic version of these transformations. So they're going to be transformations which fix holomorphic superderivatives. So I'm getting different patches. In each patch, I kill the metric and the gravitino. I made the metric flat, and I kill the gravitino, and I get some local coordinate system. But different patches might be related by transformations, which act nicely on the superderivatives. So the form of these transformations is infinitesimal form of the transformation is just this with u replaced by z. Okay. Now the geometric meaning of these statements is of course not immediately obvious because very few people are familiar with the fermionic versions of geometry. So there is a notion of supermanifold, which is a manifold with bosonic and Fermion coordinates related by some coordinate transformations. And this is giving a definition of what a complex supermanifold is, in a sense. So the usual complex transformation, usually holomorphic manifold, Riemann surface, for example, are manifolds such that you can define an holomorphic derivative, and your coordinate transformation don't mix it to the anti-holomorphic derivative. And here, this sort of super complex manifold is defined by saying if you want to have a super derivative which does not mix with other stuff under coordinate transformation. So once you have this, you can imagine you can start building superfields. You have your axis, positions of space-time. You have some partners, which also carry space-time indices, but are fermions. You have your ghosts for gauge-fixing diffeomorphisms. And there will be some super ghosts for gauge-fixing super diffeomorphisms. So these are some sort of fermionic objects associated to diffeomorphisms and metric. These are bosonic objects associated to super diffeomorphism and gravitino. So these have spin 2, these are the conformal dimensions 2 and minus 1. These have 3 halves and minus 1 half. And everything has a nice behavior under these super conformal transformations. So you can define some super fields which transform nicely. For example, you can say I put psi mu together with theta times the current associated to x. You look how this transforms under the super diffeomorphisms, and it gets multiplied by the super Jacobian, whatever multiplies the super derivatives. This is something that can be written also as d theta x. There will be a stress tensor, which tells you how the theory reacts to changes in the metric. And there will be a supercurrent, which tells you how the theory reacts to changes in the gravitino. And the super, you know, the super diffeomorphisms will mix x and psi together. They mix b and beta, c and gamma, and t and g. So everything we've done for the bosonic string gets a super in front. And again, there is a question of having while invariance. There is a central charge for this whole set of things. We already computed the central charge for the boson, right? It was 1 times the dimension of space-time. Tomorrow, perhaps, you compute the central charge of the fermions. I'm not sure we should spend time on that, but each of these contributes to 1/2. The BC ghosts contribute to minus 26. And the beta gammas contribute to plus 11. So this gives you 3/2 D minus 15, which means that the dimension of superstrings, of space-time in superstrings, is going to be 10. So superstring theory is going to be a theory in 10-dimensional space-time involving bosonic and fermionic particles. There is a so there are two possibilities roughly on when defining a superstring theory. So this is one possibility. It defines what are called type two superstrings, where you put a theta for every for zeta and a theta bar for zeta bar. There's also called something called a heterotic string. In the heterotic string, you sort of treat holomorphic and anti-holomorphic things differently. So you have a superpartment for your theta, for z, but not for z bar. Which looks a bit strange. But turns out it can work. And so here you get this sort of, so you get your coordinates in space-time, which sort of depend both on z and z bar. Then you get fermions, but only on the holomorphic side. You get b's and c's, betas and gammas on this side, but only b bars and c bars. So here you get a total central charge, which works out if you have 10 dimensions. On this side, something is missing because we only have 10 dimensions, minus 26. So I'm missing 16 of central charge. And the way this is fixed is by adding a whole bunch of other fermions, 32 extra fermions, which have nothing to do with space-time. And this gives you heterotic strings. And depending on how you make these fermions work, you can get an SO32 heterotic string, where SO32 is the symmetry that rotates these fermions, or an E8 times E8, so-called heterotic string. And here there are also some choices to be made on which we'll discuss in the next lecture. And you end up with two theories called type 2A and type 2B. And then there are things called type 1 theories, which are essentially theories where you add the extra space filling D-brains. So they're theories. So it's a bit of a misnomer in the sense that they're just the same as these theories plus extra brains. Okay. Any questions? I know this is a bit of a wild ride. Well, they live on two different types of supermanifold. There is a supermanifold which one complex bosonic coordinate and two fermions. And there is a type of supermanifold with one complex bosonic coordinate and one fermion. Now, there is not much more that I can say. There are just two consistent things you can do. And they give you two different types of superstring theories with different amount of space-time supersymmetry. And yes, so the inner mechanisms of or the theories are not very different from the ones of bosonic strings. So there is going to be a BRST charge. Which maps B to T, maps beta to G. Your states, string states will be, again, closed under the BRST charge. Module exact. As for the bosonic string, we are not gonna worry too much about what's going on with the ghosts. Essentially, this fact allows you to think just in terms of states which are killed by certain modes of the stress tensor and by certain modes of this supercurrent. And the supercurrent is nothing fancy, just psi dx. Same way as it was dx. So in practice, tomorrow we'll be able to look at the spectrum of superstrings in a somewhat straightforward manner, much as we did for the bosonic string. In the bosonic string, the first time we analyzed the spectrum, we just imposed some conditions like this. And then only later we understood how to derive them from BFT symmetry. For superstrings, I will not even try to derive the corresponding constraints from BFT symmetry. I'll just write down the similar constraints of the superstrings and see what they imply.